You're listening to Youth Voice on 90.7 KSDR.
Youth Voices.
Funky.
Rave.
You're listening to Youth Voice on 90.7 KSDR.
Hey, this is Youth Voice. I'm your producer, Nate, and here's my good friend, Troy.
Nate, that was outrageous.
Yeah.
Was it our newest one?
That's our newest one.
That was our debut today of our brand new intro?
No, we used it last week.
Well, it's very nice. I really, really enjoyed it. Very, very good work. Who did that?
I don't know.
Someone good.
Yeah.
You did. Take some credit, buddy.
Yeah.
Nate's our producer. He does some awesome stuff. You know, today on Youth Voice, we have a very special show. We are here with an old friend of Youth Voice for years, really years, like 4 years?
Something like that.
Susan Hoyt from the Snohomish Health District. We are going to talk about STDs. Susan is our resident sex lady, and we talk a lot about sex on this show, don't we, kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very excited to be here today talking about STDs and sex and like, but I want to thank Susan for coming in. Susan's also brought some of her friends along, and I'd like to introduce them as well. If you guys could step up to the microphone and tell me your name and tell me a little bit about what you do. What is this group that you're involved with?
Well, my name is Mystic.
Hello.
And, it's START, and that's Students Teaching AIDS Reality to Teens. And we go around to health fairs. We go and just help people out and educate people.
Very nice. So when you say you got to health fairs and those kinds of things, you will sit actually at a table and talk to adults that come with questions and such?
Well, we don't really target ourselves to adults. We target ourselves to the people that are more at risk, which are teens.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Tough job?
It's sometimes hard to get people to listen to you, but
so
when...
They're pretty persuasive.
Yeah. When you can get your point across, then people are very receptive.
Very nice. And when you are talking to folks, when you're talking to teens about this issue, I would imagine it's sort of a sensitive topic. Do you just bust out and say, are you having safe sex, or how do you do that?
Actually, we do more of we hand out a lot of stuff, a lot of information, condoms, stuff like that, and basically let people have their own say on things and take it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Very nice. Very, very cool. And your name is? Come on up here to the microphone.
My name is Darcy.
Darcy. Hi. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Now, Darcy, tell me a little bit about your work with START and why are you involved in something like this?
I'm a newbie, but I've seen so many kids hurt by AIDS, and a lot of my friends are infected. And,
wow. That's very tough.
Yeah, it is very tough.
It's very tough, but it's also very brave of you to look, to identify there being a problem and to realize the importance of education and those sorts of things, and then get involved yourself and actually begin to start making a difference rather than sit and complain about it.
That's all I can do, really, to help.
Very, very nice. Well, the both of you should be commended for your hard work, and I would imagine that there are some times when it can be rather frustrating.
Yeah, but you got to be blunt.
I bet you have to be. Well, today we're going to be talking a lot about STDs, sharing some information, viewpoints, opinions, and all those sorts of things. Now, as you're listening to the show, you might want to share your opinions and your perspectives on the issue, and you're more than welcome to do that, and we'd be more than happy to share them on your behalf. One of those ways is you can call me at my office, and that's 425-258-9211, extension 106, or you can email us. That's youthvoice@hotmail.com. youthvoice@hotmail.com. And we'd be more than happy to share your viewpoints with the listening audience. So why don't we begin with the very first question? Susan, actually, before we do that, you are with the Snohomish Health District. Now, I'm very familiar with the health district because of our work together and then all the other great people that work there. But tell me a little bit about the health district.
Well, I work in the STD program, the Sexually Transmitted Diseases program. And then one of my coworkers, Jessica Burt, works in the HIV office. And we work closely together working with the teens who are involved in the START program, like the two teens that you just met, and also provide STD and HIV services in the clinic through the health department. But as you know, the health department's a lot bigger than just that, those two programs. And in fact, we're involved, or part of the communicable diseases division that includes TB and other communicable diseases and the work that's done around those things. But there's also environmental health, and people will be familiar with the health department because that's where they go to get their food handler's cards, mm-hmm. or to ask questions about putting in a new well or that sort of thing.
Or the inspection of restaurants, or the list goes on and on and on. It's pretty massive, and it's pretty a very wonderful group of people that work out there. And I've often said in several of the radio projects that I've done with you folks is that we have done so much work with you folks, but you're sort of the unsung heroes of the county, and somebody, I think it might even have been you, if we've done our job, then no one needs to know that we're here, which is sort of an interesting take on
that. That would be ideal.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's get into the show. Actually, I think we have two folks who have just joined us, or one folk. Was it two or one? Hi, why don't you come on up to the microphone and introduce yourself. Howdy, friend. Yes?
This is Jessica.
Hi, Jessica. Yes, this one right here. Hi.
Hi.
We were just talking about you.
Were you?
Yeah.
All good things.
Yeah, all good things. Very, very good things. So tell us what you do with the health district.
I work in the HIV/AIDS program. I'm a health educator. And one of the programs that we're highlighting today is our START program, which Susan probably mentioned. So I do some stuff with youth. I go out to the jails and drug treatment programs and do some training for providers. And there's several women's programs that we do as well for women at risk for HIV.
Very, very interesting. I often have, I always have quite a bit of respect for people who do that sort of educating where you go into jails and things. That must be kind of rough.
Well, it's not that bad. After Susan's been there after 7 years, you get used to it. But it's actually kind of a fun crowd to do because there's a lot of interest. A captive audience,
so to speak, sure.
So to speak, and they're certainly happy to see people come in and give them the information. So they're actually, it's actually kind of a fun population to work with, although took a while to get used to the doors clicking behind
back,
you.
Slamming shut behind you, right.
But when we're there, they let us out.
That's right.
We haven't had a problem yet. And I think it's nice to be able to address the questions and concerns that people have when they may never have had access to getting those questions answered. So we also work in the youth detention centers around STD and sexually transmitted diseases and other issues of sexuality for teens.
That's right.
Very nice, very nice. Thank you both, all four of you, for joining the show today. I want to begin by asking this question. When you look at how many STDs there are in the world, we'll say, or even just in Snohomish County, how many are there? How many sexually transmitted diseases are there to catch?
If you were looking like worldwide, there's many. I mean, there's a lot of things that aren't technically considered STDs that you can get when you have sex just because of the nature of how intimate that kind of contact is.
Right.
But if we were going to think about what you really need to be worried about in this county, there's probably a handful that are pretty common, and the most common of those is chlamydia. Many, many teens and young adults have chlamydia, and a lot of people have it and don't realize that they have it. In fact, they can have no signs or symptoms.
When we're talking about STDs, in Snohomish County, the most common STDs, sort of, is there like the top three or the top five, or do you concern yourself with every single STD that could possibly be spread?
If I was going to give you the top three, then in terms of what I'd be concerned about seeing people, you know, have some information about, it would be chlamydia because it's real common. Herpes also is fairly common, a fairly common STD, and the human papillomavirus, which is the virus that causes genital warts. It also can cause cancer of the cervix. Some strains of it can cause cancer of the cervix. So another very common virus to be concerned about, and we can talk about the details of those. The other biggie, not in terms of numbers, but in terms of concern, is HIV. What I mean by that is, luckily, it's not the most common STD. It's not even close to the top of the list. But in terms of what it can do to you and, you know, health effects, it's the most serious STD. So that's one that I'd put on the list in terms of one that people have questions about and worries about, and one that we definitely want to get information out there for people to prevent.
So John has a question. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, are there ways to contract these diseases outside of sexual activity?
You know, none to speak of, really. And you hear a lot of rumors out there about, like, can you get them from a toilet seat or a mosquito bite or that sort of thing. And I'm going to say no. Essentially, you can't get these infections other than by having sex. And that's lucky that that's the case, because otherwise they'd be a lot easier to get than they currently are. And believe me, there's enough people out there with them, even just, you know, through sexual contact.
How are STDs affecting the teen population in Snohomish County and worldwide?
It's dramatic with some of the STDs like chlamydia. About 75% of all the cases are in teens and young adults. So what I mean by that is we had about 1,000 cases last year in 1999, and most of them were in teens and young adults. That doesn't mean you can't get it at any age. You know, obviously if you put yourself at risk for an STD, it's possible to get it, but a lot of the chlamydia is in that young age group, so people choosing partners around their same age, there's a fair amount of people with that infection, and it makes the rates higher in that group.
When we're looking at the different genders, male, female, is there a different rate of infection for males versus females?
If you ask me who's got STDs, it's, you know, both males and females do. But if you ask who gets reported with STDs, the numbers are higher in women. Part of that is just because women seek health care more frequently for birth control checks, because they're worried about a pregnancy, because they get an annual exam with a pap smear. They're more likely to show up for care and get diagnosed with infections. Even if they haven't had symptoms of them, they might just go in and get tested as part of their routine care. Men tend to show up less frequently when they're not having symptoms, but they show up when they do develop symptoms. So what happens in that case is there's a lot of times when men aren't treated for an STD that they have, either because they didn't know they had it or they didn't show up even with symptoms. Or they may get treated as a partner of a woman who gets diagnosed. So therefore, the numbers of reported STDs are higher in women, but men still have them and are necessary for the transmission to continue to
continue.
Occur.
Got
We're
it.
Just not capturing the numbers of men that have it as well as we are women.
So I want to talk a little bit about the specific, we say things like symptoms and sexually transmitted disease. The things that we're talking about are only transmitted via sexual contact or the exchanging of bodily fluids, and that's how it sort of is categorized as an STD?
Well, there's different ways, there's different mechanisms for transmission. With something like chlamydia or gonorrhea, it's body fluids. They only need to get to the other person's genitals, and then you can, you know, potentially you've got an infection. HIV and hepatitis B are also sexually transmitted. They're transmitted from semen or vaginal fluid or blood, but it needs to get into the other person's bloodstream, which is a little bit further into the body, making it a little bit more difficult to get. Mm-hmm. Other STDs make it easier for it to go that far. And then something like herpes or genital warts are transmitted via skin-to-skin contact. So you don't even need the bodily fluids to go back and forth. So they're all a little bit different in terms of how they're transmitted.
Got it. Here's a question. Somebody has a cold sore on their lip. They scream, "Oh, I've got herpes," or "You've got herpes." Is that herpes?
That's herpes simplex virus 1.
Tell me the difference.
Usually. There's two strains of herpes. Herpes simplex virus 1 usually causes sores around the mouth. Herpes simplex virus 2 usually causes sores in the genital area. It is possible to pass them back and forth. So when someone shows up in clinic, once in a while they've got one, you know, below the belt or two above the belt.
Got it.
But the majority of the time, if there's sores in the genital area, it's herpes simplex virus 2.
Got it. And so is the difference purely where it's just sitting on your body, or it is truly a difference?
It's truly a difference, and it's actually a related strain of virus. So if somebody gets, you can get the herpes simplex virus 1 form in the genital area.
It
doesn't change from 1 to 2. It just changes the location on the body.
Got
and
it.
Again, it's skin-to-skin contact with someone that's got it, even if they don't have symptoms. It's possible for that infection to be passed back and forth. So someone could look fine, not be having an outbreak of sores, and still be contagious to sex partners.
Whoa. What do you think about that, kids? Kind of freaky, huh? Definitely. We just have a new friend that joined us in the studio, and I want her to walk up to the microphone and introduce herself.
Janine is here.
Janine.
She's another part of our START group.
Excellent. Janine, why don't you step up to this microphone right here and tell me a little bit about yourself and why you're involved in START and what, when, why are you doing all this stuff? Why are you here today? Real close to the microphone.
Because I think it's important that teens know what's going on. I've known many people that have STDs and many people that have died of HIV. So I think it's really important that everybody knows what's going on, you know. It's not cool.
Yeah, tell me, how did you get involved?
I was a volunteer at Snohomish Health District, and I worked there for like 2 months. And then Jessica got me involved in it and asked me if I wanted to do it, and I said yeah.
Very, very cool.
We couldn't pass up the opportunity for somebody who was going to be good and get out there with us.
So. Exactly, yeah. Right. So they roped you in. You invited, yeah. They invited you in. That's a good way to put it. When you're out there doing these sorts of work or doing this outreach, can you think of a time that was most frustrating or a time that was most, I wanted to say disturbing, that might be too strong, in sharing information with kids? Was there something that sort of strikes you as the most memorable and doing that sort of work? No?
Yeah. I'm wondering about that first group home that you worked at.
We did a presentation.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like uncomfortable. And I didn't know if you could say stuff that they would understand and stuff. It was a little bit hard.
How old were they? They were
12 and 14.
Yeah. One of them was 12. Most of them were 14. They were young kind of emotionally in a bunch of different ways, but with a ton of questions about the subject matter. And I think Janine was appropriately tentative about trying to figure out how we could say things in a way that was, you know, helpful.
Right.
But it was challenging. And I think it's, you know, different groups pose different challenges, but they've got lots of questions.
Yeah.
Even if they don't always ask them real appropriately or they're not sure how to get the information across. And you know, even for like Jessica and I think there's sometimes like we're sort of sorting out what's the best way to communicate things. So these guys are getting the challenge, you know, with less experience, but doing a great job.
Right. Excellent. Very nice. Thank you for, and later on during the show, we're going to be asking some questions, and I hope you jump in.
Oh, thanks.
Nate, how are we doing on music? Do we have something that we can toss on real fast? What we're doing today is here on Youth Voice is talking about STDs. We're here with Susan Hoyt and Jessica Burt. Jessica and I think I've talked on the phone actually several times, but we're talking about STDs and talking with the kids from START, Students Teaching AIDS Reality to Teens, is that it? Students Against, I don't know what I'm saying. Students Teaching AIDS Reality to
Teens.
Protecting our peers. In any event, you're listening to Youth Voice here on 90.7 KSCR. Nate, what are we playing?
Got a little more world premiere Delta Sonic for you.
Ow!
It is off the new album, Onward into Obscurity, and it's called Blue.
Let's hear it.
Here it is.
I miss your kiss on top of my head before I went to school. It's true, it's blue. Don't know about you, but yeah, I'm out of here and I. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Youth Voice. This is Troy. I'm your host. Today we're talking about STDs, and we've got the kids from START, Students Teaching AIDS Reality to Teens, and we are happy to have you listening to the show. To my left is Susan Hoyt, and I have a question for you, Susan. When we're talking about teens, what's the age range that we're looking at? What's the when you hear statistics that teens are experiencing higher rates of STDs, or there's what ages are we referring to?
Well, when I said earlier that the majority of cases of chlamydia are in people, teens and young adults, what I mean by that is people between the ages of 15 and 24 make up about 75% of all the cases of chlamydia that we see in the county and in the state and probably across the nation.
Got it. Thank you. Lena, I know, has a question. Wake up.
Hey. Does sexual orientation change this statistics in STDs among teens at all?
We don't collect sexual orientation information when we get cases of STDs reported to the health department, so it's not one of the questions that's on the case report. It changes, depending on where you live in the world, it changes it with HIV, because in the United States and parts of Western Europe, the rates of HIV are higher in men who have sex with men than they are in the general population. But if you were to look at Africa or Asia, it's a heterosexually transmitted infection there. So it's different demographically wherever you are in the world, and those demographics can shift, you know, as we've seen HIV shift from men who have sex with men into IV drug users, and then it's becoming more common in heterosexuals, teenagers, women in the United States and Western Europe than it used to be. So it remains to be seen where that's going, but that's the one that we have statistics on.
Got it. Now, we've talked a lot about statistics and those sorts of things, which are great as a measurement, but when you're looking at adding practical application of information and sharing the facts, a lot of attitude and those sorts of things start to sort of change the mix a bit. John, I know, has a question around that.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I guess I could open this up to any of the, START kids in here. How would getting an STD, how does that affect, say, the how people start to view that person, that individual?
Which is kind of an interesting question. When you're dealing with people that have a sexually transmitted disease, does that sort of change their perspective on things? Is there some sort of a stigma attached to that, and do they respond well to it? Do they say, yeah, this is, you know, I have an STD, and do they become a tool for teaching, or do they pretend they don't have it?
It's really hard to say because, you know, different strokes for different folks, everyone's different. But I think in the way of educating people, it's really important because a lot of teens don't know about STDs. So when they find out that, you know, their friend has an STD or something, they don't know how to deal with it. They just think everything's contagious and they don't want to be around them anymore because they just don't understand. And that's why teaching them about it is so important. And since they don't know, a lot of kids that do have STDs are really reluctant to admit to it.
Do you get a lot of flack at all for being a teen sharing information around sex and sexual education and all that?
To the people that understand it, they appreciate it. For people that don't, they have their opinions and they're entitled to that.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people think that we're sharing too much information, but I think that it's all completely necessary to get the word out.
Got it. Thank you very much. You folks want to add some thoughts to that as far as teens and their attitudes around catching an STD? One of the things that I'm curious about, once diagnosed as having an STD, are there people who actually decide to change their life, or are there a lot more people who decide to ignore it? I mean, how does that work?
I think it could be a wake-up call. I just wanted to put in from the clinical perspective at the health department or any other doctor's office, when an STD is reported to the to us at the health department, that information doesn't go to anyone else. So if somebody's finding out that a friend had an STD, that's from the friend themselves or a friend of the friend. So it's not from the...
It's not published in the newspaper. It's not shared with parents.
No.
It's not, I mean, it's...
No, yeah. I mean, we're legally prohibited from sharing it with
Very
anyone else.
Very important point to make.
in terms of what we do with it, we're trying to educate people, make sure that their sexual partners get treated, and make sure that, you know, we stop the spreading of disease as much as possible. But no, the information wouldn't come from their doctor's office or from the health department. So if that information is getting out, it may not be accurate. And one thing that I see a lot of is somebody had chlamydia and a partner shows up and says they think that the person had HIV, so it starts to become a scare. You know, it's almost like the wave grows and grows, and they're actually afraid by the time they get there of another infection, when in fact
it was chlamydia.
Yeah,
right,
or herpes, right, or something that's not deadly. But it's, I think, reasonable fear. And those other STDs can put people at higher risk for getting HIV, so... But
now,
the rumors grow out of control.
Right, right. Now, go ahead and share your perspective on.
I was just going to say that a lot of people that I've known that find out that they have STDs play it off like there's nothing wrong, and they just forget about it and go and sleep with a whole bunch of people, you know, because they think that sometimes maybe since they have it that everybody else should have it, you know, kind of like in that perspective. And it sucks.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
a lot of people don't want to admit what they have, and then they don't care what other people are about other people's feelings, you know.
It's sort of a disturbing trend, but I've heard that as sort of the norm, that there are not, maybe not the norm, but that there are definitely people who, once they determine that they do have an STD, they may know that something's wrong and they may not have it diagnosed out of fear that they're going to find out that it's an STD, but once they do find out, that they still continue to sort of follow in the same behaviors that brought them that disease to begin with. Lena, you want to add some thoughts to that?
Well, no, I'm just wondering how many teens do you usually get in? I mean, what's the numbers of teens that feel pretty open coming in and talking to you? Because I know there's a lot of... kids my age that I know, that I go to school with, my peers, whatever, that don't feel comfortable reaching out for that information. How do you reach out to them other than going to certain organizations and which help and everything, but the individuals who are just kind of average Joe Schmoes who just need that information?
You're right. We do go to different organizations. We go to drug and alcohol treatment centers, schools, the detention centers and jails, and actually talk about this stuff. But we also do testing in alternative settings. Like there's a drop-in center downtown that actually is run by Planned Parenthood, but it's a teen health access center near the bus depot. And we do chlamydia screening there. So we're going to the places where teens hang out. We do it in the jail. We do it in the youth detention center. We have staff that do HIV testing in many different places throughout the county where people congregate and are comfortable, because they may not, in fact, as Lena said, they may not be willing to come into the health department or go to a doctor's office to get that information and get the testing done. So we try and go to them, and hopefully we're doing a good job of at least making those services available to the people that really need it.
Got it. Yes, Jessica.
I was just going to add in, of course, that's one of the reasons we have a peer education program, is just for that reason, because we can't get to everyone. And so we're hoping that through the group that we have, the youth group, that they're able to talk to their friends, who are then able to talk to their friends, et cetera, et cetera. And they're equipped with all of our service numbers and cards. And in fact, some of them carry, you know, condoms with them, and if people want to, you know, access them, they know who to go to get even those services, and they don't have to come in to the health district because they're acting as really people who are outreach people in the community. So.
Well, it's a pretty progressive approach to educating people. I mean, when you think about peer pressure, it should make sense that the opposite is true. I mean, if kids start talking about the way to do it, then other people will do it as well because they hear it from their friends. That makes sense. Jessica, let's talk a little bit about HIV and statistics in the county. I think that we're kind of in a weird era right now in relationship to AIDS and HIV. Lots of people know about it. I mean, you would assume, that as an outsider to the whole, to the issue as far as the statistics and those sorts of things, and not working in the field, to me it almost seems as though maybe it's not as big of a problem anymore. Is that true?
Not necessarily. And that's a good point, because I think sometimes you don't hear about it, or you think There's lots of new medications out. People are living longer, healthier lives with HIV because of the medications, although they have their own set of problems as well. But people are still becoming infected, even though they are living longer. It's about 10% every year or increase. So it's not that people aren't becoming infected. Probably what people are hearing is that people aren't dying of HIV or progressing onto AIDS. And for this has remained pretty steady, but we don't have statistics for HIV. We have statistics for AIDS, and it takes about, typically it has taken about 10 to 15 years to get to a diagnosis of AIDS. So when we look at statistics, we need to look to like the 20 to 29-year-old age range and see what the rates are there. And then you can go back and say if a person has gotten diagnosed with AIDS and they're 25, well, gee, when did they get infected?
Right.
Well, they probably got infected, you know, 5, 7, possibly 10 years prior to that. So there's about 20% of all cases are in the ages of 20 to 29, which we can assume that a lot of those people probably got infected as teens or very young adults.
That is very tough, a little insidious as well, when you think about the sort of decisions that teens can make, which makes it even more critical to get out there and get information. When you do the sorts of educating that you do, and this is sort of opened up to everybody here, what is the most common question that you get? What is the most sort of common fear or concern that these kids have when you're talking with them?
Well, I think some of the most common questions have been the most common questions for a long time, and I think the fear with HIV still, even with medications, is death, and is that overriding, like Susan was saying, that might be the reason people come in, even though their chances for STDs or other STDs are higher. But I think there's a huge fear factor from dying of AIDS, and people may know there's medications but still feel that it's a death sentence. That's one of the common fears or concerns that I get. And also that, can it really happen to them?
Right, right, right. Sort of stunned. Nothing to add to that, my friends? Well, here's a question I have. Susan, you brought up earlier that there was people who catch diseases, catch them. I don't know. Like chlamydia, you said that it heightens their chances of getting HIV and those sorts of that disease as well. Can you explain the logic behind that?
Yeah, in really simple terms, having an infection like chlamydia or herpes makes it easier for somebody's body fluids that could be carrying a more serious infection, potentially like HIV or hepatitis B, it makes it easier to get into that person's bloodstream. So for instance, if they had a herpes sore, and they had sex when they had a herpes sore, it's a break in the skin that might, in other cases, protect them from infection with HIV.
Right.
Even something like chlamydia can irritate the genital tract enough to cause tiny breaks in the skin that's an opening into the bloodstream. Another way that can happen is somebody with chlamydia could have more, and if they also had HIV, they could have more HIV in their genital secretions, and that's more HIV going into the other person's body when they're sexual with them. So STDs make it easier to transmit HIV.
Got it.
Or hepatitis B, the ones that need to get into the bloodstream.
I would imagine one of the big questions that you folks get are, what are the symptoms? How do I know if I have an STD? So I'm asking you now. How do I know? What happens to me if I have an STD? Peer educate me for a moment.
Well, what happens? There are a lot of different symptoms, and some can just be symptoms of normal sickness that may be misinterpreted. The only way to know for sure is to go in and get tested. Go to your, you know, health district, go to Planned Parenthood, go to wherever, and get tested. That's the only way to be sure, because otherwise you could have something potentially really, really dangerous and not know it, or, you know, and I just say to get tested every 6 months, because there are a lot of STDs that don't really show symptoms, or the symptoms are so brief that they come and go, and then you think that you're all right, which just isn't so. So just go in, get tested every 6 months, and you should be, you know, that's the only really way that you can protect yourself against a lot of the STDs that are present.
Yeah. I think that's great. And Mystic pointed out you can have an STD and not have symptoms, or you could mistake it for something else. Some of the kinds of symptoms that are real common for something like chlamydia or gonorrhea, first of all, most people don't have symptoms. But if they did, discharge from the vagina, discharge from the penis, burning when you pee for both men and women. Those are the most common symptoms of that. With herpes, it causes sores, actual sores in the genital area that look like cold sores. If that's easier to imagine, because most people have seen cold sores around the mouth, and that's it can look similar to that. And those sores come and go. So somebody can look healthy and not have any sores and still have herpes, and it's a lifelong infection, so they could pass it on, even when they don't have sores.
So when you say a lifelong infection, meaning that there's no cure?
There's no cure. There's medicines that can help to treat the infection and make kind of control the infection so that people have less frequent outbreaks of sores, or the sores will go away quicker. But there's no cure for it. Once it's in their body for life, and they could be potentially infectious at any time. The wart virus causes bumps that actually look sometimes like warts would on other parts of your body. But it also, some strains of it don't cause any symptoms at all. And some of those strains are the ones that can cause cancer of the cervix. So that's why they recommend that all women get a pap smear. All sexually active women get a pap smear once a year. That's a test for cervical cancer.
Got it.
In parts of the world where they don't do that test, many women end up dying of cervical cancer. So if you catch it early, it's a treatable infection. If you don't catch it with that test, it's possible that someone could progress to, you know, a deadly cancer.
So when we look at diseases like chlamydia, when someone catches that, ultimately they can?
With chlamydia and gonorrhea, you can get it treated. If you catch it early, it doesn't cause any long-term problems. If you don't catch it in time, it can cause an infection in the uterus and tubes in women. Once in a while, it causes a similar infection in the testicles in men, and those infections can leave scar tissue that could potentially make somebody either sterile, so they can't have kids. Either for a guy, he can't cause a pregnancy, or for a woman, she can't get pregnant. Or cause problems with tubal pregnancies and other really serious complications. So if you have an infection like that and it's not treated, it can be very, very serious.
Got it. What I want to do right now, the topic of STDs and sex and teens is really can be very uncomfortable for parents, for community leaders, for school principals, for those kinds of things, for those kinds of people. Lena, you were mentioning a project that you were working on, and I want to talk a little bit about that because I think it's a nice jump into distributing information at the high school for Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah. A couple friends of mine are involved with Planned Parenthood, and I'm going to start working with them more heavily on Valentine's Day. It's going to be a project to distribute condoms and safe sex materials and information, because it can be something that is looked at as okay among the community. Right now, it's kind of awkward. There's some groups of people that are interested in putting condom dispensers around the school, because not to promote sex, but to promote safe sex, because regardless of parents interfering and authority interfering with the kids are going to still have sex, you know. So Planned Parenthood is working towards making it more accessible and easier to accept as a teen that safe sex material is an option and attainable around the community.
What we're going to do right now, you want to add?
I do. I want to actually ask one of my teens to come up and add some information, because the Planned Parenthood what they're doing actually started with us, and they're working with us. So you're meeting somebody that got outreach from Planned Parenthood. So tell us.
Please
what
do,
we're
yeah.
Doing on Valentine's
what,
Day.
What are you doing on Valentine's Day then?
Yeah, I think actually what she's doing is really cool, because what our group is doing is we're touching down at three different schools on Valentine's Day to get condoms out, information, all that kind of stuff, because we all know what happens on Valentine's Day. So, we're getting out information, and we actually have done it on different days. We did it on World AIDS Day. We do it probably every couple months, just outreach, just getting condoms to kids. And because, yeah, it's not about promoting sex. It's about promoting safe sex. And a lot of people say that, you know, by giving kids condoms, it's going to make them want to have sex or whatever. But you know what? Kids are going to be having sex anyway. There's, you know, that's inevitable. It's going to happen. It's just the way things are. I mean,
And for the people who don't want condoms, we also pass that information so that they can help their friends get that information out to other people. And the outreach packets that you were talking about, we've been making, and Planned Parenthood's been making some. So we'll all be working together, you know, with Lena and all the teens that came with Jessica and I today on Valentine's Day to get that information out there in a positive way to the teens that want the information. And we also put chocolates and stuff in the packets, too, so that, you know, brings on the romance, and they don't have to take the condoms if they don't want, but we're making it available if they do.
I think it's most important as a teen to have that as an option, to have that there, because a lot of it's kind of almost taboo to talk about it. Even in health class and stuff, there's a unit on it and they talk about it, but getting down to the core and that, yes, the students in these classes are going to be experiencing these feelings and doing these activities, now let's bring it to the person. So having it as an option to have resources around the community like Planned Parenthood, which I think is in a wonderful location. It's downtown in that area where kids, because of Everett High School being in that area, there's lots of kids around that area. And I really agree with the activities. I actually didn't know the health district was at all involved in that, and that's really interesting. I mean, I'm not even on the board of Planned Parenthood, but I'll be one of the distributors, so yeah. I just think it's really great that there are other people involved, and I think the more community support you can get for it, the more promotion it'll cause, and you'll have an all-around safer community, and people will be more at ease, I think.
Very, very nice. You know what we're going to do right now is take a musical break. Nate, who's playing a music?
John.
A musical?
John is.
John?
Yep.
John?
Yeah.
Is John's mic on?
No, hold on.
Yes?
There it is.
Oh, hey, how's it going? Okay, yeah. yep. I'm playing for you a little bit of Beck here. Just for your listening pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Is it off the new CD?
No, it's not. Actually, this is kind of a semi... No, this is like pre-Mutations-ish. This is actually off of a Lifeless Ordinary soundtrack. It's Deadweight. It's like, I believe this is the only CD you can get it off of. It's a good track.
Very nice. Here you go. Some Beck for you here on 90.7 KSCR. You're listening to Youth Voice. Think that sharing or promoting safe sex resources gives people the idea that they can have sex?
If they take it in that way. I think that if you're mature enough to have sex, you should be mature enough to have safe sex. And to have a friend give you a condom and tell you to be safe, then they shouldn't take it any other way besides that.
All right. Yeah, do you want to add some? I mean, Darcy's been really quiet for this show, and I want to hear some of her perspective. So handing out condoms to kids in high schools, there's a lot of people. Boy, there's some high schools in the county that have said, we will not discuss sex at all with our kids, period.
Well, we were asked to talk to Scriber Lake High School's administrative about whether or not we can hand it out on school property, and we still haven't gotten a yes about that. Because the concern is parents having a cow about it, basically. Because they are thinking that by handing out condoms, we're asking people that, we're telling them that sex is okay. Sex is okay, but it's, you know, safe sex is even better.
Got it. What do you have to say to those folks like, I believe it's Marysville, and they still have that policy, don't they? The policy of no talk about sex, period.
Yeah, I think Marysville has a fairly conservative policy in terms of sex education. Many of the other schools do education, but don't make condoms available to teens on campus.
Got it.
So when we do the outreach that Lena and Mystic were talking about before, we make sure that it's off campus, that students who are, you know, when they're not during school hours, they have access to the information.
So how will you go about doing that then? How do you go about sharing information with kids off hours if you're targeting, say, Scriber, and Scriber says, no way, you cannot hand out condoms to our kids on school grounds? What do you do? Do you go across the street?
Yeah. Yeah, they group outside of school and at the bus stops, and yeah, you just go there. I think that we might get an okay on passing them out at school, because it shouldn't be a bad issue. It should be something that needs to be targeted. We need to, maybe not during school hours, but it needs to be out there for them.
Got it.
Because there's more people hanging out at school. You know, not everyone hangs out at the smoking tree, so to say, because that's basically where everyone hangs out. Not everyone's there. There's people in the school, too, as well. The Scriber, they run until, like, 8 o'clock at night, so.
So there's all kinds of kids there all throughout the day and night, and it's important that those resources are made available at school, on school grounds, right?
Or off school grounds, but there's people on school grounds, too. Not everyone.
Right.
Yeah,
like you said, not everyone's hanging out by the smoking tree.
Yeah.
Got it. Mystic, do you want to share some of your thoughts? Because I've heard you say some things off the microphone, and I think you definitely have some opinions about the issue. If I'm a parent, and I'm furious that there's this program run by the health district that is having teens talk to other teens about sex, and not only that, but you have the audacity to hand out condoms at school, where my kid is supposed to learn.
Well, that's the thing. We are teaching these kids about safe sex. And because, you know, you're going to have sex for a good long while after you start having it. And they need the education, you know. And I think, personally, that parents should be grateful that we're going out to their teens and we're teaching them, you know, the basics. I mean, we're not, you know, teaching, but about safe sex. Because it's really, really important to know, you know, about condoms and proper use and different ways to go about doing those things, because you know what? Otherwise, their kids are going to get pregnant, and you know what? The kids aren't going to know how to deal with that. The parents are probably, if they don't get an abortion, you know, like if they're against that, then they're going to have to, you know, deal with the kid. Yeah, you know? It's not the teens that are going to most likely be taking the responsibility. It's going to become the responsibility of that child's parent. Because, and why would you want that if you can prevent that by having kids like us go around to their schools and teach them how to avoid that situation?
That's a very, very good point. And I think, you know, it's almost as if pregnancy is sort of the lucky draw when you look at the possibilities that are out there. I mean, we're talking you can have a baby and be thankful that it wasn't HIV.
Well, I think here's my question to the START kids. As teens, you know, dealing with the same pressures everyone else is, the same pressures that of the kids you're, you know, educating, what do you think is most important to educate? What do you think you need to know? What do you think they need to know as the basics? Because, you know, you can teach as much as you want, but what do you think are the most important to inform kids about?
Well, I would say on that is condoms, condoms, condoms. They're the most important thing that has to do anything with safe sex. They're the basis of everything. They can prevent or help prevent pregnancy as well as STDs. Because, you know, anyone can take the pill and that will most likely prevent pregnancy, but it's not going to prevent you from STDs. Condoms for male and female are very, very important because they do prevent so many things. And they are, whether people know it or not, very accessible. You just need to know where to go to get them.
Yes, your thoughts.
Abstinence works. Well, very well.
We jumped right into condoms, and I think the messages about condoms are clear, and without a doubt, they're really helpful to prevent STDs and unplanned pregnancies. There's many methods to prevent STDs and unplanned pregnancies, and Darcy brought up abstinence. And we could also talk about, you know, sticking with one partner who's only with you, and I know a lot of people who use that as a method of STD control. That, you know, if you're sexually active with that person and it's a male-female couple, there's still the risk of pregnancy. But we're not really out there to push one agenda. So we want the condoms to be available to the people that need that as a method of prevention. But we also want information about, you know, how to get checkups and where they can go for information, and all that stuff would be in the outreach packets that we hand out. And, you know, we talk about all that kind of stuff, too. So we're open to the whole variety of possibility in terms of prevention.
Got it. Yeah, and I like the idea that abstinence is included in a menu of choices for sexual health. Yes, go ahead.
And get tested.
Get real close.
Get tested. I know many people that haven't been tested for HIV, many people haven't been tested for STDs, and it's important. Girls get tested for STDs, but I think it's really important that males get tested for STDs and HIV too, because it's not mandatory for them to get a checkup, and so it's easier for them to pass it to us. So, but
here's my question, though. Talking with the teen who is worried about getting tested, and they ask the question, but when should I get tested? What's the rule that I use what do you say to people like that? When should you get tested?
If you're sexually active.
Ah, good answer. That's actually what I was looking for. That's exactly what I was looking for. So if you are having sex, period, go get tested.
Uh-huh. If you have symptoms, you should get tested. If you heard that somebody that you had sex with had something, you should get tested. If you're getting into a new relationship, it would be a good idea to get tested if you've had other sex partners in the past. What else can you guys think of?
If you have multiple partners.
If you have more than one partner, get regular testing.
Yeah.
Mystic before suggested just getting a checkup every 6 months. If you don't have symptoms and you didn't have another reason to go in, but you're sexually active, get a checkup. Now, if you're with one person and you really, really trust that they're with you and you both entered the relationship with no STDs, you could, Mystic says,
get
up to the mic and say that. Even if you're sure about all that.
Get tested anyway, because you don't know who might be lying to you.
Okay. So she says it, you know, take what people say with a grain of salt, especially if you haven't known them very long. Take care of yourself.
Excellent advice. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, another question. Say I have a friend who's wanting to get tested. Where do they go, and what steps do they need to take to be getting tested?
We can see them at the health department in the STD clinic, and we have a site in Everett and a site in Linwood, and the phone number is 425-339-5298. For HIV testing, they can also call us at the health department, and the direct line is 425-339-5251. Planned Parenthood does STD testing, and gynecological services like birth control and pregnancy testing, and they have a site in Everett and Linwood, and I know the Everett number off the top of my head, but you can get any of their five sites in Snohomish County if you call the Everett site, which is 425-339-3389. So those are some of the clinics that you can use locally. There's clinics all over the state. So if you were to call us at the health department, we could hook you up if you were in Seattle or in a different area and you needed more phone numbers to get to a clinic near you.
So at those clinics, they can get...
At our clinics, and it's easier for me to speak about that because I'm more familiar with them. At the STD clinic, they can get STD testing and treatment regardless of their ability to pay. We operate on a sliding fee scale, and it does slide to zero if somebody truly can't pay for their services. For STD care. For HIV care, it slides to zero if they're at risk for HIV. And there are some behaviors that put people at higher risk for HIV. So we're trying to, I guess, triage services to the people that need it the most, because a lot of these tests are really expensive. And especially for teens and young adults, the rates of STDs are higher. That's why there's more universal, you know, testing available, even if they can't pay.
Got it.
And if you're 14 or over, the state law allows you to be seen regardless of whether or not you have parental consent.
So I think that that's a very important thing to reiterate, and that is if you are 14 years of age and older,
mm-hmm.
you have the freedom to see a physician on your own without fear of your parents finding out unless you tell them yourself.
For STD care. Yeah.
And then is there a difference in another arena then? I mean,
if somebody broke their leg, they'd probably need their parents' signature at the hospital to get it set.
Got it. There you go.
Okay. So, but for STD care, there's a state law that allows people to see any doctor or clinic in the state without parents' consent. In fact, it's illegal for the clinic to tell the parents unless the teenager authorizes it.
Is that even if that's even with the testing? Even if they have the capability to pay through their parents, do they still have to tell if they get tested?
No, the state law is about consent. It's not about payment. The only time that I would caution people is if you're going to give a medical card and the stuff, and then the information is going to show up on the medical bills to the parents, then that would be an issue that's technically it shouldn't happen that way. And at a clinic where there's either no fee or sliding fee and you're not billing an insurance like ours, then that wouldn't happen at all. And so that would be like a mistake if that happens.
Got it.
In terms of the, it's not supposed to happen.
Sure. And the people who are there as far as the clinicians and the folks who are taking teens and helping them access these services, for the most part, should be rather sensitive to the to those sorts
yeah,
of issues.
Yeah, we're not allowed to tell, and yeah. We definitely don't.
Got it. Got it. I want to talk a little bit about the pregnancy issue. Does it sort of take a backseat to STDs? I mean, do kids come to you with questions about pregnancy a lot? Is that, I mean, and then one of the questions were, are there more kids, say, getting pregnant than getting STDs or vice versa? Or just generally, what are your thoughts about that? I know Lena has some thoughts on that, too, in a question. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, people that are pregnant, you notice it more. A lot of people with STDs don't go around and say, oh, I have chlamydia, and, you know, go around and say it, which is, like, when you're pregnant, people get bigger and stuff. They still go to school. I know many girls that have gone to school that are pregnant, but you don't know about people with STDs. In pregnancy, it's more noticeable.
Got it. Got it. Go ahead, Mia.
So what are the statistics? Do you know?
As far as what versus pregnancy versus STD?
Yeah, I know a lot of my peers, for instance, are more concerned about becoming pregnant than STDs, but from who I talk to in the situation that becomes, more of them are apt to or end up getting STDs than becoming pregnant. Is there any reason for that, or is there any way to prevent there to be any need to have a balance at all?
Yeah, I don't know if we have good... We've got the statistics at the health department, and I can get that back to you for a future show, but great. I don't have it on the top of my head. And I think it's challenging, too, because many of the STDs that we're talking about are not reportable, or we don't capture really good statistics about the reporting. So chlamydia, we've got great reporting. Herpes is reportable, but it often doesn't get reported because a lot of times it's a clinical diagnosis with or without a laboratory test, but the reporting's not as good. Human papillomavirus is not reportable. So if you were to add up all the STDs, we don't have ways of measuring that. It's a little bit easier to get more accurate pregnancy data for you, and I can do that for you. I could get back to Troy this week with information on the number of teen pregnancies in Snohomish County in 1999. Yeah,
that
you could put
great.
It on next week.
Definitely, because this is just one of a series of conversations that we're having around sex and sexuality. Today we're talking more about STDs and HIV and those issues. Next week we're going to be getting into more of the philosophical sort of questions around sex. Who defines our attitudes around sex, sex in the media, on and on and on the list goes. It should be an interesting show, hopefully as interesting as this. Jessica, did you want to add some thoughts?
Well, I just wanted to add the thing about pregnancy and take my health district hat off and put, you know, when I was a teen, and I think, and I don't know how you guys feel about this today, it's the same way that Lena feels, but I was certainly more concerned about pregnancy and probably imagine would be today as well. And I don't know, you know, why that is. It's because, you know, it's more visible. You know that there's going to be, you know, a human being that you're going to, you know, be raising for a lifetime versus an STD, which for the most part is treatable, you know, if you catch it early. So I think they're both really important issues. I don't know if you would want to weigh, you know, any of them as, you know, more important or less important, but they're all important. I think someone had mentioned earlier about the use of protection and prevention, and one of the big things I think when we talk about pregnancies and STDs is that sometimes we do get overly concerned about pregnancy, and so just turn to all the methods of birth control, which are great for pregnancy prevention, but not good for STD prevention. And so trying to talk about them together is good because you will find a lot of people using protection for pregnancy, but not thinking about the STDs and using the barrier protection. And I get the sense, and this is just my own sense, and I don't have any statistics on it, but that maybe coming to schools and talking about pregnancy prevention is a lot more acceptable than talking about barrier protection like condoms for whatever reason. And we're still talking about the same right. activity. So it's very interesting when you get into your attitude discussion next week. That'll be very interesting.
I wonder if it's because you could be like taking the pill or the shot, which are hormonal methods of birth control for women that prevent ovulation. And you right. could do that regardless of whether or not you're having sex. But the minute you start talking about condoms, you're only using them you're only using them if
at
you're
the
having
time.
Sex.
Right, exactly.
And it conjures up images of putting on condoms and the whole sexual aspect of it that, taking a pill, somebody could be doing that for other medical reasons, like controlling periods or
sure.
there's a lot of different reasons.
A lot
that
of other excuses that you could use.
That's right. And yeah. a lot of people do use that excuse when they may, in fact, be using it for birth control.
It's about my complexion.
It's not as intimately connected with the sexual act, though.
Got it. So that might be the reason.
I don't know. You can think about that and talk about it next week.
Absolutely. Well, I want to talk a little bit about attitudes around STDs and those sorts of things. When we talk about condoms versus abstinence, when you share that as a resource, when you share abstinence as a reality, as a 100% effective way of preventing STDs in pregnancy, do people go, yeah, whatever? Yeah. As if, tell me about it. Tell me what they say. I mean, how do you battle that? Because the reality is, don't have sex and you're going to be all right.
People just don't want to listen. I mean, yeah, be abstinent. Yeah, right. What are you talking about? You know, I'm going to get mine. Da, 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 da.
Right,
I mean,
right.
people, that's just the way kids are. I mean, a lot of kids aren't, but a lot are. So.
Do you ever get that kid that goes, oh, abstinence. I never thought about that. Or do you not hear that?
No.
I mean, I don't, to me, to it doesn't honest. Seem like, I mean, it, to me, it seems like, abstinence should be a way, or it is a way of actually preventing the transmission of a disease, but I don't know how cool abstinence is. I mean, abstinence for some may be an excuse for, you know, I mean, you if you are abstinent, you might be a geek or something. I mean, that's sort of the flavor of that. I mean, am I wrong?
No, abstinence is cool, and I know very many people that have not had sex ever. And some of them are in their 20s. Some of them are waiting to have sex with, you know, man of their dreams or whatever.
Right, right.
And there's nothing wrong with it. Because sex isn't that fun. You know, it comes with problems. It comes with all kinds of problems.
All kinds
Emotional
of
Emotional problems. You know, you get the guys who say, oh, I can't wear a condom. I'm too big. Or, you know, and then so you buy into it. And then there's an emotional problem right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think I am... For me personally, it's refreshing to hear abstinence as part of the story, because I think a lot of times people flip out and they think that folks who are out doing sex education are just talking about having sex, that's what it's all about.
But yeah, I almost think that we almost forgot to mention abstinence, so I brought it up. People don't think about it very often because it's a human act. We all, you know, it makes the world go round. It really does. But it's not going to hurt if a couple people don't have sex, you know, for their own good, for society's sake.
Yeah, very nicely said. Very nicely said.
And also, abstinence doesn't mean that you can't do anything. There are plenty of things that you can do without actually having intercourse. You know, there are lots of other fun things to do besides just full-blown sex, which, you know, and I'm sure you can use your imagination to figure those things out. So
in using my imagination, we don't need to get into details, but there's still some fear there, though. I mean, when you have intimate contact with a human being, there's still the opportunity to catch something. Isn't that true?
Yeah, you'd want to be careful not to exchange body fluids, and then the skin-to-skin genital touching can transmit the herpes or the human papillomavirus. So there's still, you know, and I think Mystic's getting at different levels of sexual activity that people can partake in without being really, really risky. And what that means to me is people define abstinence the way they want to define it. And we talk to teens who mean they won't even kiss someone until they're almost married. And then other people mean, well, they have a very intimate sexual relationship, but they don't have intercourse, or they'll only, you know, touch their partner. They won't do anything else because they're trying to prevent pregnancy or you know, prevent STD transmission. So there's different things that you can do. It's all in the definition, and guess what? We each get to define it for ourselves.
Excellent, excellent. I think it's important information to share is that abstinence doesn't mean that you're sitting at home alone wearing 50 layers of clothing. you know, that's not abstinence necessarily. For some people, it might be, but for other people, it is choosing not to be not so intimate, right? Very nice, very nice. Nate, do we have a song queued up? Is it Lena Bobina?
Yep.
Lena Warrior Princess?
Yep.
What are you going to play today?
I'm going to play some Suzanne Vega. I actually got this at the library. I just thought it was interesting. And this is Tombstone. I saw her at Lil Fair a couple years ago. And she's a good live performer. And I really like this album. So it's called Tombstone off of Nine Objects of Desire.
Right on. You're listening to Youth Voice, 90.7 KSER. Everett. Welcome back to Youth Voice. This is Troy. Today we're talking about, well, we're talking about all kinds of stuff. Sex and STDs, sexually transmitted diseases. We're here with our friends from the Health District, Jessica and Susan, and kids from START, students teaching AIDS reality to teens. And I appreciate all of you and your fine input. And the program that you're running is fantastic. The program, the outreach, the information. I mean, this is a very tough job to do. I would imagine it would be tough for me. Educating people is not easy. Educating people about sex, whoo, doggy, that's too much. That's hard. That's hard work, and I commend you all for doing it. We're going to move into a little bit. We've got, about 15 minutes left of the show. Let's talk a little bit about sex and attitude. I want to address this towards the kids in the room. When you survey when you take a peek at the landscape of your teen social structures, and you look at your high school and you look at the friends that you hang out with, what are the current attitudes about sex? What are people talking about it? Are they ashamed of it? Are they scared of it? Are they whooping it up? Are they, what are they doing? Go ahead.
There's a lot of people. It depends on who the person is. There's a lot of people that, you know, are going to flaunt it and be like, oh, I had sex with her last night, or I had sex with him. Then there's other people that don't tell their business, which isn't other people's business, you know. Then there's people that are abstinent, that don't have sex, that don't have anything to say.
Got it. Thank you. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I think the people that brag about it are basically just insecure, or else, you know. And a lot of them, they might not even be having sex. They decide to brag about it and talk a lot about it because they don't know any other way to be cool, I guess. And since it's very apparent in our society today to speak about it in terms of being cool, they feel better about themselves, even though in a lot of ways they're putting themselves in danger.
Right, they don't realize it. They sort of see it as their ticket to cool, their ticket to I got friends and I'm having sex, which means I'm obviously a good person. In the end, they're not all that good of a person because they're catching an STD. I mean, that's an interesting sort of thing to think about, or they're putting themselves at risk for catching an STD. Yes?
I try not to make judgments, you know, when we're doing education or when I'm talking one-on-one in clinic as to whether or not somebody is a good or bad person, because that's beyond really the questions that we would deal with in a clinical setting or in START. We're really trying to give factual information about what's out there and help people to make decisions that keep them healthier. And because someone's had an STD or an unplanned pregnancy, to me, doesn't make them good or bad. It just makes them somebody who's at risk for those things and
absolutely.
Who needs information. And
well, and I think that that's an important distinction to make. When we talk about attitudes that kids have at school, though, do you have to kind of deal a little bit with the whole changing of perspectives, because they may think that they will get more friends, they will become a better person because they're having sex with people or because they're sharing that information? Is that something that you don't take into equation at all as far as attitudes around sex and sexuality?
I'm going to turn that over to the teens in the room because they're more familiar with it. I do, when I speak to groups, I mean, a lot of times I find like this is what they're thinking about most of the day. You know, they're thinking about sex or their boyfriend or their girlfriend or getting a boyfriend or girlfriend or how to get, you know, comfortable in their peer group and what that has to do with sex or drugs or violence or any of the stuff that we would be concerned about, you know, with teens and young adults and people of any age, really. So it's something they're thinking about a lot, even though they're not, it's not permitted really to talk about it in an open adult way in a lot of settings. So I think when we start doing that, we automatically shed light on things and make it a more comfortable arena of talk. But I'm going to turn the actual question over to these guys about what it's like and do people look for acceptance that way.
So do people look for acceptance through look for love, look for popularity via sexual activity? Is that a reality?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, I think it really also depends on the social group. I mean, you can be in one situation where, like, the popular kids, it's more accepted if the guys are kind of, you know, pimping it out, you know. And then you can get down to the, like, kind of band and drama nerds, you know, like myself, who really it's not in the equation at all, whether or not who you're sleeping with, whether you're promiscuous, monogamous, anything. It really doesn't matter. But I think it's also really stressed by the media and how Mystic said earlier, how the world views sex is kind of like a gray area, how we can't talk about it. It's really hard to talk about in person, but it's on TV. It's how we sell things. It's how we buy things. It's how we judge people. But when you get down to it, it's so hard to talk about in a factual, you know, appropriate manner. So accepting it amongst teens is even harder, even though it is just as much of a fact as it is among grown-ups.
You know, I think you bring up a very, very interesting point. As a society, we have a really hard time sitting down with our kids and talking about sex. However, you can flip on the TV and see sex selling everything. All sorts of programs on MTV with the focus, the singular focus being sex.
Loveline, and there's a new show, Undressed, which is like kind of almost like a low-budget soap opera that is about sex. That's all it is. And it's kind of, it's really kind of raunchy, too. I mean, it gets beyond anything educational or anything truthful, it's kind of weird. And
it's
that's
sort
all
of like
it
a
is.
Really sexy, like Beverly Hills 90210 melodrama. It doesn't teach you anything.
But it has no
really
plot other than sex. That is why it's called Undressed, which is the bizarre thing to me, is that it's got different characters in different situations, but they're all about sex.
So what do you think about that? So now we've got on television all kinds of information, all sorts of sexual discussion and shows that are basically about sex and melodramas that center around the act of having sex and commercials that sell things, beautiful women, scantily clad, the whole thing. But we have a hard time passing out a condom at a high school. Or we have issues where parents are afraid to talk to their kids about sex. Do you see that there's like sort of a disparity there?
A what?
Do you see that there's sort of there's something missing?
Well, I think that the reason why, you know, sex sells and there's sex on TV and sex in music and sex everywhere, and then the reasoning behind the fact that a parent would have a difficult time talking to their children about it is the emotional aspect of the situation, because there's no attachment, there's no emotional, no emotions present, you know, when you're watching the TV or when you're watching, you know, like a beer commercial or whatever it is that people are trying to sell. It doesn't affect you emotionally, but when you're sitting there with your parents and they're talking about their experiences or the experiences that you may be having, it's a lot more difficult because it's on a personal level and not about media.
I think I hear what you're saying. I think, so basically you're watching TV, you can kind of remove yourself a little bit from that, but when you're sitting down talking to mom and dad about you, mm-hmm. that gets a little bit more uncomfortable. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
And I think in another way, like going back to the school issue and passing out condoms and the parents being upset, I think that the parents don't want to admit that their kids are having sex. I mean, that's a really, really big issue. I mean, there's so many, and adults, a lot of adults, you know, STDs and stuff, some of them don't get tested either, but it's a big thing and they want their kids to be safe. And so they don't want them to go out and have sex and be high risk. And I think that's one of the big things that why parents are so upset about passing condoms out at schools and stuff. But another way, they should be happy because, I don't know.
Exactly. They
because
should
they
be
have
grateful.
Access.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
I was just going to chime in that the media is a real interesting point, and a lot of times when I go out and do presentations, I will talk to the audience about, or the group about, what some of the attitudes and values are, just to kind of get the discussion started, because I think how we base our decisions and how we can talk or not talk about this starts with how we view our attitudes and values about some of that stuff. And not to say that any of it's, we're promoting it one way is the right way or the other, but just being able to talk about it is a huge issue. And we don't sometimes talk about those attitudes and beliefs because it's again, scary because we're afraid it's going to bring up, I'm not sure what the bad thing is that it's going to bring up, but I guess the emotional issues that people are concerned about. And the balance on television isn't there. You talked about all the information about the TV shows that talk about sex and the commercials that talk about sex, but we just never really see the other side. There's very few messages or commercials that talk about what really a healthy, safe sexual relationship can be like. We just see the other side of it. So we're very imbalanced, and I don't know how we can bring that back into it. But it's a good discussion. I think it's great to talk about it with people because it's a good starter as far as how they're going to be able to relate to themselves and to other people from where they're coming from.
Absolutely. What I want to know is what you think, folks, as you're listening to this show. We bring up some very confusing, concerning topics that there really is no easy answer. But we're also very interested in hearing what folks in our listening audience what folks in the listening audience have to say about this topic. Do me a favor. Why don't you give me a call at 258-9211, extension 106. That's area code 425-258-9211, extension 106. Or you can email us, that's youthvoice@hotmail.com. let us know what your thoughts are on this. Let us know, has this topic enlightened you? Has it concerned you? What do you think about passing out condoms in school? Is that a good idea? Is that a bad idea? Should kids just not have sex, period? Is that, I mean, are we too lax? Are we too permissive? Or is the reality that kids will have sex no matter what era it is or was, and we need to provide them with the resources to be healthy? I don't know. Very interesting questions. I want to end, we've got about 5 minutes left in the show, or maybe a little under 5 minutes, with this question. What do you think about the gender bias as it pertains to sex and sexual activity? For instance, and I'll use very blunt and crass words, so cover your little kids' ears if they're listening. If you are a girl and you go to a party and you have a pocket full of condoms, people may say, boy, that girl's a slut. That girl is ick. But if a guy goes to a party with a pocket full of condoms, they'll say, way to go, sport. He's just, you know, he's just sowing his oats. He's boys will be boys. Those sorts of things. That kind of behavior, that sort of mindset is really still alive today as far as I see it. I see some people nodding their heads. Why don't you share with me your thoughts about that? Is it right or wrong?
Go for it. If you're a girl, bring condoms to a party. Be prepared. It takes two people to have sex. It takes one person to take control of the safe sex part. And if it doesn't matter what gender you're part of, you're taking responsibility. It's the context under which you use them. I mean, sure, if there's a girl walking around with a pocket full of condoms and sleeping with everyone, then yeah, that would be, you could say, well, that's kind of not the smart decision, but you know, she's using condoms. And if you have a boy with a pocket full of condoms, he probably is planning on sleeping with a lot of people and he's using safe methods, so go for it. I don't see anything wrong with it, and you're taking responsibility, which is the first step to becoming a smart, mature adult, you know.
That makes sense. Other thoughts?
I basically think the bias is crap. I mean, I don't think that it's fair, and I don't think that it's really as relevant as some people make it out to be. Because, you know, girls, it's more acceptable for them to go in and have condoms and be prepared than it used to be. But I still don't understand the fact that a guy is encouraged to go out and have sex with 10 girls, but if a girl goes out and has sex with 10 guys, she's considered a whore when she walks into school on Monday.
Right, right.
And there's also the issue, I've talked to a lot of guys about that, and since I'm not a guy, but there's a lot of pressure for them just for that, just because they're supposed to live up to those standards, you know, be a guy, and you're supposed to have sex with all these girls and, you know, all this and that. And for girls, when you have sex with a lot of people, you're considered a slut, but I don't know, it's just really hard to compare the two. But I think for girls, carry condoms around, it's totally cool. I carry one with me. You know, it doesn't matter, like, what race you are, or, I mean, what gender. So.
Got it. Makes sense to me. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to add that, you know, a girl going to a party sleeping with 100 guys is only going to get pregnant once. But a guy that goes to a party and sleeps with 100 girls might be, you know, might be expecting 100 babies. You never know.
Yeah, so the bias should almost be turned around.
That definitely makes sense. It definitely does make sense. And on where it comes from or why it comes from, I do not know. But what we're going to do right now is thank the people from START. Thank you so much for coming and sharing the information with us today. Susan, would you do me a favor and share resources with our audience, phone numbers and those sorts of things, so that if they have questions, further questions about this, that they can call?
Yes, the STD Clinic in Everett and Linwood, the phone number is 425-339-5298. The HIV program at Snohomish Health District, you can reach at 425-339-5251. And I'm going to plug Planned Parenthood one more time because they're another good resource for gynecological care, birth control, and STD care in Snohomish County. 425-339-3389. 425-339-3389.
Fantastic. Susan, Jessica, the ladies from START, Youth Voice cast and crew, and Nate, our producer, I want to thank you all for a fine, fine production. Next week, we're going to continue the discussion around sex. Next week is going to be even more in-depth philosophical discussion around why the taboo, why the shame, why the fear, why the lack of communication, and sort of look at it from a societal standpoint. It should prove to be a very, very interesting conversation. Do me a favor, stick around, because the next show is my favorite. It's Pastors Aplenty with our friend Dave Moody. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you next Sunday.